Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
On this episode of Plant Killers, we'll explore one nation's most notorious fruit and vegetable killer, bad dirt. What makes bad dirt so bad? The answer? The ingredients. But fear not, true crime enthusiasts. This story has a happy ending. New Miracle-Gro Organic raised bed and garden soil. It's made with quality organic ingredients from upcycled green waste like compost and aged bark. Unlike the other guys who can't say the same. Looks like bad dirt's murdering days are over, thanks to Miracle-Gro. Join us next time on Plant Killers.
We're back. It's a distraction. I'm Drew. That's Roth. How you doing, Roth?
I'm good, dude. Are we going to do another soul-bearing 40 minutes of telling each other that we care about each other?
No, this time we're just going to talk about shallow, annoying crap. Which,
hell yeah. Now who I'm does back it? On my home turf.
Yeah, who wants, you know, deep, profound conversation when they're listening to a podcast? Much better to be like, are we sure Ben Simmons is good? Like, we want that. Right. Joining us is Patrick Redford. Hi, Patrick.
Good morning. Another year of Sacramento Kings basketball, boys. We did it.
Unbelievable. That's right. Patrick is here to join us for the NBA preview. Also, Patrick is sick, and he is normal sick. Incredible. How are you feeling, Patrick?
I conversely feel quite good. I feel like being regular sick is really having a moment right now. You know, I know a lot of the cool influencers, Zoomer types are like having a little bit of a head cold, and it's like, ooh, what's going on with them? Are they just like... You know, does their voice just sound like that, or are they regular sick? Ooh,
yeah.
What's going on?
I think that there's some kind of unrealistic standards for mild sinus infections that have been set by sites, you know, like platforms like Instagram and stuff.
Yeah, just remember that's not real life.
Yeah, just because that person has like rich bags under their eyes and obviously is sleeping badly, that, you know, a lot of times that's just like stuff. They have a whole team that makes them look like that.
Yeah, consider the Zicam product placements and you can sort of understand the dynamic.
Right, yeah. Open the third.
Not an ad.
My son, who's in seventh grade, he got sick last week. And of course, you know, he's vaccinated, but anytime he gets sick now, the first thing you think of is, oh God, you know, like, fuck, COVID. And I took him to the doctor and he got both COVID tests. He got the immediate one, which my wife believes is like a scam. And then we got the long-term one. And then he also got a strep test too. And I was like, I was putting my money on strep. I was like, I bet strep. And it was none of them. And I was like, all right, he's just regular sick. How about that? But it lasted like a fucking week. And I was like, you have no business. If you're not COVID and you're lasting a week, get the fuck out of here.
I was also as healthy as I've ever been over the year that I spent, like, not mentally, obviously, I think that goes without saying, but the year that I spent inside with my wife streaming television, like, not a single day did I wake up feeling ill. So I think that, like, getting normal sick is just the consequence of, like, sort of tentatively being around other people's germs. I don't know what Patrick's lifestyle is. I know in California that a lot of the younger people are having these parties where they scream directly into each other's mouths.
I'm a family man.
And that
man.
May have been what you
That's
were
Orange
doing.
County, though.
Yeah, that is a different, whole different
Yeah, thing. different side of the state.
Where are you now in California, Redford?
I live in Oakland. As soon as the Warriors came over to the city, I switched and came back over here to the better side of the bay.
Nice.
But you spent most of your pandemic like on a goat farm. Right?
I spent the first chunk, basically... I think I've told this story possibly on the podcast before.
Yeah,
but
I feel like it.
Yeah,
but nobody remembers. It's fine.
I was on this farm when we quit, where my partner was staying, and then I sort of spent most of like October through April or so down there, like herding goats and hanging out, and it was a nice time.
When you herded the goats, did you have like a staff?
Yeah, and you can smack them a little bit, but like.
Really?
You know,
wow.
Yeah, because they're like they're big. Like the biggest one is
dinner
like,
canceled. Patrick Redford.
There's this guy Gulliver. He's goats. Like the size of a horse, and he's a little fucker. But really, the trick is like you find whichever is the alpha on that day, and you like grab them and run with them, and all the goats will follow them. Like their herd instinct, they do all the work. Welcome back to the goat season preview 21-22.
Yeah.
We're getting into it here.
This honestly, like the second this ends, it's Marvin Bagley chat. So I hope we can keep the goat thing going.
One goat to another.
Did you talk to the goats in goat? Like, did you go, like, to get them to do something?
No, I would just swear at them. I'd be like, fuck you, get moving, let's go, come on. That didn't work either.
I know with the dog, because the dog doesn't know I'm swearing at him, so I can just go, you fucking piece of shit.
And the
just,
goats would try to establish dominance over me. Like, they don't really respect you for, like, the first 2 weeks or so. Like, they just won't listen to you. They'll try to just do their own thing. You have to, like, you have to establish yourself as the alpha.
Do they try to mount you? Like,
fortunately, no.
Whoa, all right.
Do you feel like they accepted you as, like, one of their own by the end, where they were like, the tall one that doesn't make the sounds we make, like, he's a bit of an asshole, but you know what? He's part of the team.
I'd like to think so, yeah.
Yeah.
What are the goats for on that farm? Like, are they there? Because I know that a lot of Californians use goats to clear out underbrush because they'll eat fucking anything. So you can clear out lots of woodlands and stuff like that. But what were the purpose of the goats on this farm?
You're on the right track there. It's sort of a... Oh, we're really getting into it. This is good.
Yeah.
It's sort of a three-part thing.
He doesn't want to talk about Bagley either, dude. Like, one, he's normal.
You milk the goats and you make cheese, yogurt, goat milk. It's delicious. Even people with like lactose issues could just crush that shit.
Two, really?
Yeah, you're on the
There's
right.
No,
no, it's like, it's totally good. The other thing.
Yeah, my cousin drinks it. It's fine. It made me feel weird. I wasn't used to goat milk, but when she was staying here, I had it with my coffee every day. And then I was just sort of like, there's something wrong with my coffee, but I don't know what it is.
It's kind of weird.
Tangy.
Yeah, there's like a rangeland management aspect, which we don't need to get into. And then you eat them, and they're really good.
Did you have to kill a goat? And I'm not asking that like salaciously. Like, did you have to do that so you would eat one?
I wanted to, but I was never there at the time of a slaughter. My partner helped with one. And it is when Giddy was there, he had some too. And it was like probably the best meat I've ever had because, you know, you eat the babies and they're really soft and it's a whole thing.
Well, also you like stew it. There's a way to prepare it. And if it's fresh, it's going to taste better then.
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
Yeah, goat's delicious, but also goats are cool. I like them. It's with any animal. Like the more time you spend around them, the worse you feel about eating it. From my experience anyway. I don't know. I never had a goat defy me. Maybe maybe you felt like you were getting revenge.
Oh, I was almost ready for the
you got this. You got segue, this.
Go ahead.
Speaking of goats, Giannis! Let's talk about the NBA. Right. And what happened last night? Because last night was the first night of the NBA season, and there were a smattering of games. Tonight's going to be sort of more the full menu, but we got the Warriors defeating the Lakers and Russell Westbrook struggling out of the gate, which he did last year. And then we had the Bucks beating the absolute shit out of the Nets, and Kyrie Irving was not present for that game. And I cannot remember, I believe it was with you now, Patrick, but before the season began... Like, it's weird to have these actual games to talk about because we spent the past month talking about Kyrie Irving and Ben Simmons both being annoying in their own distinct and particular ways. But I had a bet with one of you, which is now going to be both of you. I bet $1. I was like, oh, Kyrie's just – he's just fronting, and he's going to get it the last possible second, and he's going to act like he was made to get it, and he's going to be super unhappy, and he'll just – he'll have beaten Andrew Wiggins, you know, in the holdout realm, and he'll go and suit up. But he didn't. And so now I owe each of you $1. But here's the thing. It's not that I'm anti-gambling, but I'm not going to pay you because of so many people have lost jobs because of gambling. And I want to stand in solidarity with those people. So I'm actually not going to pay any of you.
Well, I have to respect your HIPAA rights on this one. So
yeah.
I was going to invest that $1, but I guess I'll just have to build equity in some other sort of traditional format.
Yeah,
that's right. You got to respect HIPAA.
I'm going to get on my grind and earn that $1 elsewhere doing something else. I don't know what it'll be, but obviously I respect you as having a pro-gambling, anti-losing stance. I think that's actually a very popular position in a lot of
ways.
That's
right. That's right. Gambling is only good if I win. That's the only time I'm good at taking. Do either of you, Patrick, do you think Kyrie will appear in a single game this season, or do you think it's a sealed deal that he will not play at all?
I think he'll get in there eventually. I mean, he backed off the flat earth thing at some point. And, you know, I think, like, obviously this stance is bad, but I think a lot of Irving's weirdness has been a little overblown. And I think he has, like, done and said a lot of good things. Obviously a lot of dumb things, too. But, like, something he's shown somewhat consistently over his career is, like, he is willing to, you know, make some changes. And I think, like... the Nets last night had a pretty clearly Kyrie sized hole in their team. And I think once if they have a slow start or something, Durant's going to pull him into a room and just be like, all right, man, like we're the title favorites. If you get the shot, like, please get the shot. And I think at some point he'll listen to reason.
Yeah, I feel like any person, like, once you get a, like, you need to get serious speech from literally James Harden, yeah. That has to be a wake-up call. You have to hear that and be like, all right, well, I guess this is the situation I put myself in.
Well, isn't there a much more cynical way of looking at it, which is that he can just not get it for the first half of the season and just rest himself and then get the shot and come back in the middle of the season for the stretch run and he'll be all good and ready to go for playoff time. Isn't that kind of the strategy that might play in, Patrick?
You know, in a strictly basketball sense, that does work a little bit just because, like, Patty Mills and Javon Carter are, like, weirdly functional as backup guys. Like, Mills was their only good player in the first half last night. But, you know, I think the Nets have handled this about as well as they could have. Or they basically just said, like, yeah, it's his choice not to take it. It's also our choice to, like, enforce the laws of the state and the country. And it was weirdly... It didn't seem like it was that present on the broadcast last night. Like, I was pretty pleasantly surprised by Stan Van Gundy just being like, well, he's not here. You know, they'll figure it out. And back to this pick and roll over here.
Yeah. There was the pregame stuff had, like, Charles Barkley making a pretty, like, spicy speech about how everybody should get vaccinated. But it was the sort of thing where it was like the three, like, Kenny, Charles, and Shaq all were like the three different flavors of, yeah, maybe you don't like it, but you should probably do it. You know, so, like, Kenny Smith was the one that made the point that seems most popular in making about Kyrie, which is just, you know, he made a choice and you got to respect the fact that he made a choice. And I think that's a very easy sort of point to rebut. Like all kinds of choices exist in the world. And the idea of just going into whatever Chipotle and just being like, fill it with rice, only rice. Like, you've chosen to eat that burrito, but, like, that's a bad choice, dude. Like, you're going to be upset as a
also
result
that,
of that.
That adopts anti-vax, lingo and sort of mainstreams it, and I fucking hate that.
Yeah, like, yeah, the idea of a binary there is pretty false.
And this I mean, Shams. Oh, sorry, go ahead, Pat.
Oh, I was just gonna say that this is a point that's been made thousands of times in thousands of blogs and podcasts, but, like, taking the vaccine into the framework of, like, a personal consumer choice just sort of poisons it from the outset. And I think, like, in rhetorical terms, like, that's just a pretty useless and self-defeating way to think about it, but it's, like, the only way we can, because that's, like, how that's America.
Yeah, that's, like, how we get medicine now too, which yeah. Again, doesn't work so good. Like, a lot of people get sick and die for no reason. But yeah, that's making it the sort of thing where you're choosing brands. There was kind of, you know, I wasn't mad about it because people were getting vaccinated really fast and for a while, and that was cool. But the whole sort of, like, Moderna gang versus Pfizer fam thing early was pretty cringe in that regard, where it's kind of like, you know, like, this isn't the funnest thing. Like, you're just doing it so you can go back to, like, riding the bus again.
Yeah, but I'm Sinovac squad, so, like, that's pretty, you know, that's pretty Wait, special.
Really?
No, I wish.
Work? It's good. Yeah,
I want to get like the full boat. I want to get all of them.
Yeah, sampling, like, a flight, being like, ooh, the AstraZeneca. It's like, really, like, you get smoke first.
They might do that for the booster. They said that they might allow mixing and matching, so you can get a little bit of Derna here, a little bit of Pfizer.
It's like going to the soda fountain, just like Dr. Pepper, yeah. 7-Up, let's go.
A little after dessert, like, shot glass full of AstraZeneca.
Yeah, like, or like getting a Maro after a bit. It actually helps you digest.
And then there's the issue of Ben Simmons, who went to practice with the Sixers and got kicked out of practice because he basically didn't practice, right? And the great Shams at The Athletic, who's really gone above and beyond in the realm of prose torturing.
Use of the English language, yeah.
Yeah.
And Patrick, you highlighted a sentence he wrote yesterday about Ben. It said, on Sunday and Monday, he completed less than a handful of total defensive drills at practice. Nothing more. Nothing less.
Like, wow. By Sham Sanders, that was, like, a pretty clear-headed, legible blog. But that
yeah,
sentence,
you understand what he's saying.
The more you turn that sentence over in your mind, the more you hone it like a gem, and you realize, like, what a pristine example it is.
Yeah, once you hit the M dash part of it, it's like on a roller coaster where you're going up. That's the part where people start screaming, is when the M dash hits, because you're plunging earthward.
Because then you get that real dramatic, almost sort of State of the Union punctuation. Nothing more, nothing less than less than a handful, which isn't even measurable.
Nothing less than less than a handful.
Like, what is a handful? Is it five drills? Is it three? I don't fucking know. Like, how many?
Well, it's nothing less than that. So, you know.
Yeah, just do the math. It's not hard. I don't know why we're going over this. It's
So then I want to ask you, Patrick. I don't really give a shit about whether or not Simmons appears with that team. But it seems like they're going to try to make it work because they want more for Simmons than they can get, and they're the only people who don't realize that that's not possible anymore. But do you think that the Sixers' odds of coming out of the East, how affected are they right now? Is it possible for them to get past Milwaukee with or without Simmons either way?
I still think so. Probably not with him just because that situation seems way too broken. But like, if you look at that team, you know, you'll have Tybull, Harris, and Embiid, which gives you a top five defense sort of on its own. And it doesn't take that much to make them a lot more functional. The problem is Ben Simmons is like the only guy who can make two dribbles and then make a pass on the team. Right. So if they can flip him for like, I don't know, say Buddy Hield, Davion Mitchell, and Marvin Bagley, you know.
Davion Mitchell's good. You don't want to trade it for Ben Simmons.
We don't need to get into the Kings minute just yet. I don't want to poison the podcast, but
didn't fair Simmons enough. Specifically request to go to one of the three California teams though?
Yeah, exactly. That was a highlight of the summer until the Bagley thing yesterday. But like I said, Simmons is like, you know, he's good. He fills a weird hole, but if they replace him with like two good guards, I think you all of a sudden unlock Embiid a lot more because like he and Simmons like to stand in the same places and that's bad. And if you just free that up for Embiid and he can just crush people, like, you know, it's not hard to see this team really becoming the best version of itself.
What's funny about Simmons to me is that he could be a very, very good complement to that team. It's just that it's not a role that he wants to play. So, and it's this weird thing to me where they have the ideal component to be part of that team, but he won't fucking do he can't in some instances in terms of scoring. But like if they traded him for someone who was just, they said they didn't want role players, but in fact, that's exactly what they need around Embiid, or people who are like really, really capable role players. And Ben Simmons could be a capable role player and will not be. Am I wrong?
I think he's a little more, he's a weird player. Like, I think if you apply the grand Kyle Wagnerian unifying theory, which I'm an adherent of knowing where to stand, it sort of makes sense. Whereas like Simmons, he's a great passer. He's good on the ball, but like off the ball, he just stands under the hoop, which is like the same spot as Embiid. And like you basically in the modern NBA, you can't really win a title unless you have three shooters on the floor at all times. And with him and Embiid, you have to have those other shooters, which they don't exactly have. And then they sort of make each other worse because they both just want to stand under the hoop.
Yeah. Like the deficits that Simmons has put like extra pressure on player on like Danny Green or whatever, like it does run downhill on the roster to make it like the guys that should be less important are more important because you have two dudes trying to occupy the dunker spot at the same time, which is why
like the version of Simmons that shoots threes is the perfect player. Like you're very right about that, Drew, because then like it's not simply because he will spread the floor more, it's just because he will not like stand under the hoop. I think it's literally that simple.
Who do you like in these conferences? And I'm not saying that in terms of like, well, I am asking in terms of chances because it's sort of a wide open season right now. And we don't know because this is the first full NBA season in 3 years, the first full NBA regular season in 3 years. So I don't know what the after effects will be of the bubble season and then this truncated season that was like, I think 72 games, 75 games,
yeah, 72.
Where the Bucks won the title. And it seemed like a very legit season to me, but it was played in the beginning, at least in empty stadiums. It gradually got fuller in a very, very encouraging and fun way as we got into the playoffs. But now we're going to have full arenas for 82 games all season long. And I want to ask you, Patrick, which teams you think will flourish this season, and also which teams you want to flourish, which teams I should be rooting for, and of course, which teams I should just get into the toilet.
Well, the Bucks and Nets are definitely the big two in the East. And as we saw last night, the Bucks look awesome. Giannis is flying around, you know. Unfortunately, Grayson Allen. Oh my God. Did you see that block where like his arm bent backwards and he still just blocked the shit out of it? We love it.
Yeah, I was watching him in the finals. I was like, he can't get better than this. And last night, he was just fucking amazing. Yeah. I was like, I guess he can improve.
I mean, if he plays like that, if he's able to play like that in like mostly like in November regular season games, then he will win another MVP. It'll be so cool to watch while doing it.
Later. And like he spent the whole preseason just like splashing threes and hitting pull ups, and everyone was just kind of freaking out because they're like, if he gets a jumper, it's over. And it's like, he just won the title without being able to take a shot outside of 8 feet. Like,
yeah.
It might already be over.
Like, that was right. The fun part of the finals thing, too, is that, like, because I feel like the jumper thing had always been a response to the fact that in the playoffs previously, like, he had just been doing these, like, straight line drives to the basket that, like, when people are making business decisions about challenging that during the regular season, like, they're still cool. They lead to cool dunks, but they didn't work in the playoffs. And then suddenly everything that he did worked better than anybody since like young Shaq had in the playoffs.
Only after he hurt his knee too.
Yeah, right. And so now it sort of seems like he doesn't need the jumper. So if he just sort of adds it like now, like if this is the moment that he decides to whatever, shave some truffles over the top of this entire entree, then that's pretty fucking wild. Like I would look forward to that.
Who else in the East is worthy of our affection, Patrick?
I think, well, your mileage may vary on the affection, but I think the Heat are going to be real good this year.
Yeah.
You know, Kyle Lowry taking his tremendous ass and equally tremendous work ethic down to like the place where everyone just runs hard and fights all game is going to be, I think, a great combination.
Yeah. They're fun to watch annoy other teams.
Yeah.
They are. I mean, maybe it's that I link them so closely with our beautiful Luis, wonderful Luis in my head, but it's a similar sort of vibe in the sense that like they're extremely good, but they also seem to take a lot of pleasure out of being unbearable. And like, I admire that. It's not something I'm going to necessarily like, but I'm not rooting for a team in the Eastern Conference. So I'll just enjoy them being annoying.
Usually I don't like pest teams. Like Duke does that. And I'm like, they're so fucking annoying. But when the Heat do it, I'm like, no, that's cool.
Like an authentic expression of like the way that Jimmy Butler's personality has like sort of impacted the team where like winning is nice, but like bothering another person, that is where the fun is for them.
Yeah, Drew, that's a good point. I think like the Knicks, I mean, you know, it's the Knicks, but I think they also are a somewhat sympathetic pest team just because like the way they cohered from this like collection of misshapen lottery picks into like an actual good team, even if they got the shit kicked out of them in the playoffs, was like pretty inspiring. And there have been I've been reading a bunch of tweets this morning about how bad their point guard situation has been for like 20 years. And they finally have like, you know, Emmanuel Quickly, like a young, cool guy. And unfortunately, Derrick Rose. But like, I think the Knicks are going to be pretty fun this year.
Let's go over to the West. And we have the Warriors who beat the Lakers last night. Steph Curry had a triple-double to kick off the season. And Klay Thompson did not play in that game. And I assume, I don't know what his timetable is.
He's like a month away from practicing is what I've heard. But it's only a month. Like he's like way closer than all the big Western Conference stars that are out. Like, he'll be back months before Jamal Murray will
be.
Is it possible that the Warriors will, when they get Klay back, or even now, that they will be able to reassert themselves atop that conference, Patrick?
It's going to be a tough ask, just because their bigs are not the best. And as banged up as everyone is, you know, you're still looking at Ayton, Jokic, Anthony Davis, and like, I love Kevon Looney, but like he's not cut out for that. And we all saw Nemanja Bjelica looking hilariously overmatched against LeBron and Russ last night, yet still do stuff.
Yeah, he was having a great time. That was like we were talking about this on Slack last evening, that there is like, you know, the way that you think of like a vintage Jimmy Butler game or a LeBron game, like there is such a thing as a Nemanja Bjelica game too, where he seems like he's playing on rollerblades and is just doing the most. But it was super fun to watch. Like, he was just, I was used to watching him have to set picks for like Carl Anthony Towns or whatever. And it turns out that he loves attempting difficult layups. That's actually his real passion.
And Drew, to your earliest question, the Warriors have been hateable for a long time, right? But I think this year, I think this is like a really fun, cool team because they're trying to take essentially the San Antonio Spurs path, which is like one of the hardest things to do, where they have all their guys. And, you know, they've had three lottery picks over the last 2 years. And instead of flipping them for whatever stars, I think mostly because the Beal market was weird, they drafted James Wiseman, Jonathan Kuminga, and Moses Moody. And if those guys turn into like their ceiling outcome, they could do that rare thing of transitioning from like one generation of stars into another. And I think that's like kind of a tough ask given those specific guys, but it'll be really interesting to see if they can like actually convert that.
It does seem like at the very least they found a cost effective and like you said, decently high ceiling way to like rebuild a second unit on the fly without having to lose top stars that they, you know, that they need in order to really compete. I was struck last night. I mean, it's one game of like one regular season NBA game, but a lot of the players that they had during the sort of wilderness seasons where, you know, without Thompson, parts of those without Curry too, that like, I thought like Jordan Poole looked like a real NBA player. Like if they're able to spin a couple of real rotation guys out of that like revolving door of waiver wire chaff that was moving through over the last few years. And yeah, that's again, Spursian, but they need that. Like as, especially, you know, as their stars age, they'll need other guys that are capable of playing minutes productively. And like, if they can find that if, like on their roster already, then I don't think they're as good as the best teams in the West, but they seem much better than I expected them to look last night.
They have never not been fun to watch either. Cause like, I know that like there was a stretch where I rooted against them, particularly when they played Cleveland and Cleveland, you know, and LeBron had the comeback in 3-1 and all that. But they were always fun to watch. And a lot of my hate was really directed at our former colleague, Kevin Draper, who was just the most annoying fucking Warriors fan in the world. But if they come back and they reassert themselves and they become, you know, another, you know, a sort of second generation, you know, dynasty with, you know, Steph still doing Steph things, but with, you know, a relatively new cast, that's going to be pretty fucking cool.
Yeah, like, Steph led the league in scoring last year.
That's amazing, man.
You know, and that was with trying to bring along one of the most raw center, like top level center prospects we've seen in a while. And like the top of the West is weird this year. Like as we saw yesterday, the Lakers are kind of clunky and flawed. Even if LeBron is still LeBron, like, and then the Clippers and the Nuggets both have really serious injuries. And then the Jazz and the Suns are the Jazz and the Suns. So it's decently wide open. Like I think, you know, a surprise team like the fourth, like the Sacramento Kings, you know, maybe they run. Yeah. Maybe, you know, Tyrese Halliburton learns how to create off the bounce. You know, it's like
we were getting a lot of, this is a live show. So we've been getting a lot of messages in the chat asking about the Marvin Bagley situation. And I don't feel qualified to speak on that, but we should talk about it. Let's give him exactly 60 seconds to explain what's happening with Marvin Bagley. I will time it.
Okay. So yesterday, Jeff Schwartz took the very unprecedented step of going above Woj's head and just straight up tweeting out this like really, really the punchy statement, basically saying that the Kings said, you know, Bagley wouldn't be part of our rotation. We yada yada yada. Let's get him out of here. And I, for what it's worth, I think basically they said we can't start him because he's bad at basketball and can't defend anyone. And he's not going to meet the standards of a starter to get his qualifying offer, which is like a really grim thing to have happen in the number two pick. He's got to be out of there, I think.
For the people who don't know, Jeff Schwartz is Bagley's agent, correct?
Yes, sorry, yeah.
I think everyone knows who Marvin Bagley III's agent is, Drew.
I'll read you the copy, because the copy is actually quite funny in how serious and how stern it is while undermining itself.
It's incredible.
Sacramento has informed Marvin Bagley he is not in the opening night rotation, which is completely baffling. This was issued an hour before tip-off. It's clear they have no plans for him in the future, and yet passed on potential deals at last year's trade deadline and this summer based on, quotation marks, value. Instead, they chose to bring him back but not play him, a move completely contradictory to their value argument. This is a case study in mismanagement by the Kings organization. Case closed.
Were you referring to your own client's value with tone quotes around the word?
Like, that's pretty brutal.
I have some notes on that. Like, just as an editor, I have some suggestions about how you might phrase that differently.
People are coming up to me in the street with tears in their eyes and saying, Marvin Bagley sucks shit. We don't want him. Not even for a second round pick.
There is something, especially when Drew was reading it out loud, like seeing the statement, because it's the hot new way to send weird broadsides at the entire world. It's just a JPEG pasted onto a tweet with words on it. It had, you don't want to say that something is Trumpian, because like every dumb thing fundamentally, like if you get down to the bottom of it, is Trumpian. But in this case, a superheated statement about an issue that only real sickos know or care about delivered from a position of vast umbrage. Like, really, it was hitting all the pleasure centers there. Like, it wasn't exactly stunting on Colin Powell's grave, but it was in the same universe of rhetorical expression.
It's got serious Chris Farley as Bennett Brower vibes. Like, he said he's not good, that he doesn't play well, that he's a bad teammate.
So, Patrick, what is the actual gambit there? They're just trying to save money on how much they are going to have to pay him in his RFA year, or
the Kings what? Aren't. I mean, I don't. We don't need to spend too much time on this, but I don't even think the Kings are doing anything. They aren't. I don't really think they're meaningfully like fucking around with him. Bagley just hasn't been healthy, and so to get like the standard qualifying offer, you have to meet starter criteria, which is like starting over half the games or something, and like. To Bagley's credit, like, he is very athletic and he genuinely tries hard on defense, which is why it's so heartbreaking that he's just like completely non-functional. And they had the worst defense in NBA history for a long stretch of last season because you start Bagley and Hield next to each other, who like also tries hard but just can't do it. And so it's like, if the team is serious about trying to win basketball games, you can't start him. And so basically what I think happened is they said, hey, we're going to start, you know, Tyrese Halliburton or something. And then Schwartz, who's been agitating both behind and in front of the scenes to get him out of there for 2 years, is like, well, we have no other option than to wait till an hour before the season tips off and then turn the caps lock key on and press send.
Yeah, get spicy on the bird.
We got to take a break, but I want to ask you two questions before we finish this preview, Patrick. One, is Zion fat? Because that's he's now in the Matthew Stafford territory where every season he shows up and you're like, is he fat? I can't tell. And then the other one is, who do you like to win the title? So first one is Zion, and then the second one is the title.
Zion is certainly problematically dense. There was some report, I think, that came out today that he's over 300 pounds, which, like, he showed last season he can make it work at a very large weight, but he's also carrying a foot injury, which tends to be as ominous as possible. So that's
very bad. Yeah.
That situation's a little grim. Like, he's not going to play in the opener. He apparently didn't even tell the Pelicans he got surgery till he showed up to camp, which is another bad sign. And I think the Bucks are going to do it again, just because I don't know if the Irving situation resolves itself. And I think whoever wins the East, I mean, of those two, probably wins it.
Which is a weird thing. We've lived long enough to see that happen. Absolutely. Like, a full strength Nets or full strength Bucks, I think at this point is better than, I mean, just, you know, whatever, from the vantage point of one day into the regular season, is better than I can imagine any team coming out of the West being. But the top of the West, like, all those teams, as hurt as they are now, like, full strength Nuggets at the end of the year, like the Suns playing like they did at the end of last year, like, those are super duper good teams. It's just, I don't know, there's a lot of a lot more questions there for basically every one of the contenders that I'm used to seeing. Like, yeah, and this year too, I think with the Lakers, even if everything goes right, I still don't know what they're going to get from Russell Westbrook. I don't know what they're going to get from the supporting cast and stuff. It's weird. Like, it feels like an inversion of the pattern from the last, I don't know, 15 years in terms of like how the two conferences sort of appear.
Well, I'm sorry, you're all wrong. The answer is the Minnesota Timberwolves.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
Carl Anthony Towns is watching videos of gorillas fighting to get amped up for the season. They're going 82-0. They're winning it all. No one denies this. We'll be right back.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Capella University is rethinking higher education. With their game-changing FlexPath format, you can earn your degree on your schedule, so you can fit education seamlessly into your life. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.
On this episode of Plant Killers, we'll explore one nation's most notorious fruit and vegetable killer, bad dirt. What makes bad dirt so bad? The answer? The ingredients. But fear not, true crime enthusiasts. This story has a happy ending. New Miracle-Gro organic raised bed and garden soil. It's made with quality organic ingredients from upcycled green waste like compost and aged bark. Unlike the other guys who can't say the same. Looks like bad dirt's murdering days are over, thanks to Miracle-Gro. Join us next time on Plant Killers.
We're back to do stupid shit with Patrick Redford. You ready for all the stupid stuff, Patrick?
Born ready.
Because the Intelligent Kings discussion we had, it got a little
esoteric.
Yeah, it got a little elite.
A little upper academic, I would say.
Yeah, it was, you know, it was something that is really only understood by the intelligentsia and, you know, to our more common folk.
Let's reify some spaces in a much dumber way.
Hey, let's remember a guy. You want to remember a guy, Patrick?
I would love to. That's why I came.
Well, good, because the guy remembering this week in your honor is Ketino Mobley. You remember that guy?
I remember Ketino Mobley. I think he
was a king.
He was briefly a king. He was mostly a rocket.
Okay. Yes. Was he good on the Kings? I mean, is anybody good on
I remember him being good. That was like the tail end of their being dece. But the other thing I remember is, didn't he show up to the Big Three or like one of those other scammy leagues with like a huge beard?
Yeah, he looked like Uncle Drew. He showed up with a big gray beard and he could still like he was. Before people recognized the sort of basketball player hooper distinction that has now riven the basketball world into, Mobley was a hooper's hooper and was cool to see him in the Big Three still kind of trying to dribble between other people's legs and just do stuff that he did in the NBA. He and also, Steve Francis on those Rockets teams were fun as well, and they clearly loved playing with each other.
Yeah,
Big Shorts era. A lot of really promising vibes that never really resolved there, but they were fun when they were fun.
He also went to URI, and it's always fun to remember times when, like, weird, like, little new, like, shitty New England schools were good at college basketball, like them and UMass, because Cal Perry was there and just bought everything, and, like, Providence, like, when Patino was there.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, I don't think that'll ever happen again. Like, I don't see UMass rebounding. Like,
I think that their reason that they were competitive in part was that Jim Harrick was coaching there, which is sort of similar to a Calipari thing.
Paid off Lamar Odom to go.
Right, you bring a guy in and you're sort of like, well, we'd like to watch a couple of 20-win teams and we are willing to, like, pay on the back end in some sort of, like, removing banners fees. But, like, it's worth it. It's not necessarily a bad choice if you like watching fun basketball. And, like, whatever, they all should be getting paid, so.
He was ahead of his time in that regard, you know?
That's right. All that energy got transferred over to, like, the Wichita State Conference. So, like, it's all, like, it's like Creighton now instead of UMass, which I don't, as someone who hates New England sports on principle, I can't argue with that. I'm perfectly fine with that transition.
URI was a very popular party school for kids from my high school that were really good at partying or that wanted to get better at partying. And everyone at Ridgewood High School in New Jersey called it UR High.
Like the marijuana.
Yeah,
right?
Joke. It was a joke, Drew.
High on drugs.
Yeah.
It's like funny to imagine the University of Rhode Island being like New England, UC Santa Barbara.
Yeah, they're both near a beach, I guess, but it's a different vibe. You know, New England beaches are kind of forbidding. Like, that's more of a sort of, you know, like a place where you stand and curse God. Whereas I've been on the beach in Santa Barbara. It's really nice. Like, you don't have puritanical thoughts there at all.
Dead or canceled. It's time for dead or canceled, Patrick. You ready to play?
I think so.
Coach O at LSU, is he dead or canceled?
He's canceled.
He's canceled and fired. Bye-bye, Coach O. You have to work pretty hard for LSU to consider you unacceptably perverted and fire you as a result. But Ed did it. Good job, Coach
Orger. He did it as soon as his team stopped winning.
Yes, he did.
That was basically it. Yeah.
They got all the juice out of that lemon that they could possibly get, and he is going. And they will absolutely, positively hire someone who's even hornier and weirder to take his spot. I can guarantee.
It's the LSU process, you know?
It is. Yep.
You need a culture reset with Bobby Petrino. That's how you get things sorted out.
Yeah, the sort of malevolent ambient horniness was definitely what popped in that athletic report. But
is it unreal?
He's a single guy. He has the right to be horny and to go out and get laid. And somehow he fucked that up, which is amazing.
In the sixth paragraph when they're like, everything was great. And then Orgeron got divorced, and that's when the problems, it's like, ooh.
But they hit the little section break with the Athletic logo, and you're like, oh, this is gonna get, it's about to get wild.
You're like, oh.
But the football stuff is equally wild, where he like needed to hire like all these assistants and then would just call up his mentors. I forget exactly who it was. And they'd
Pete
be like,
Carroll.
Oh, just hire this guy who's been out of work for 5 years. And he's like, cool, sounds good.
Yeah. It was all names I recognized, but it was like just 2006 guys. And so he called Pete Carroll, and Pete Carroll was like, do you remember Bo Pelini? Like, they basically played Let's Remember a guy on the phone, and then Orgeron put that guy in charge of his fucking defense.
Incredible.
Yeah.
Let's go to the fun bag. This is from Kenneth Patrick. He writes in, the standard bathtub shower with the shower curtain has a fatal flaw for showering that I've never been able to conquer. Either you turn it to shower mode while you're inside and get a jolt of cold water sprayed on you before it becomes warm, or you risk getting water all over the floor if you try to get in after you've turned it on. What is the correct process for getting into a standard tub shower with a curtain?
This is a good question. I think you don't want the jolt. You can't do the jolt. That's no way to live.
No.
You gotta like turn it on and then sort of, you know, Phantom of the Opera yourself with the shower curtain and just stick.
Ooh.
You know, this is sort of a wingspan contingent thing, but you know, you gotta stick the arm. There's a visual element that viewers can't see. But you gotta stick the arm in and sort of gauge the temperature, you know, indirectly while minimizing the spray. But it's a physical process, you know, which I'm sure not everyone wants to get into.
Yeah. As somebody who loves showering, I do it all the time. I respect, all showers.
Nice brag.
Ooh, surprising.
Yeah, thanks. No problem. I think it's a question of where you have the shower head sort of pointed there. Like, if you have it hitting the actual, there should be a part of the tub shower area where the water is not hitting you that is also demonstrably behind the curtain. And so if you do that, then you can make your way in a civilized fashion after checking the temperature and turning it all on. If you have it pointing directly at the back of the tub, then you're just going to have to accept being a sloppy boy and making a big mess of your bathroom every time you shower.
Yeah, I aim it at the wall and then turn it on while I'm out of the shower. Like, I aim the shower head at the wall so that it goes against... But then, of course, you get a little bit of splashback, but whatever. It's a bathroom floor. It's supposed to get fucking wet.
Yeah, like, you got
to
live a little. Like,
yeah, there's not carpet in there.
Hopefully
I am, like, surprised whenever I get into, like, any bathtub shower, but particularly one, like... In a place where I'm not familiar with, a place like a relative's house or a hotel or whatever, whenever you flick that switch that goes between tub and shower, there's always like a rumble, and then it's really fucking violent. Like, it comes out at like 500 miles an hour, like a goddamn fire hose hitting John Rambo while he's naked in the pit of a jail. And I was like, whoa, hey, just come on a little strong here, shower. Calm down.
That's American ingenuity, though, because they a lot of times in the past, the shower, you would get in the shower, the water would barely come out. It wouldn't come out. You couldn't get wet. You couldn't do your hair. And then they changed it. The president changed it to make it so that the showers were now powerful and strong like they used to be before. And so you can get in there now and you get clean, you get wet. And I think we should go back to that. And I think that's something that we should continue to look into.
This is from Alex, who writes in, Patrick. Oh, throughout the past 6 months, I've had MLB.TV on during the workday as essentially background noise since I work from home by myself, cats notwithstanding. However, now that the playoffs have started and there aren't any more day games, I've found that an eerie silence has befallen over my apartment. What do you recommend I put on in the background during the workday to make it feel like I'm not sitting home alone, reliving the same day 5 times a week? What should be his ambient background noise, and is music too intrusive, Patrick?
I'm going to answer this question somewhat orthogonally, but when I was on my sort of 12 blogs a day weekend/night blogging grind, I would listen to the first Avalanche's album over and over and over and over.
That's
again
big
my entire shift.
I left you.
Yeah, exactly. But like,
it's
six
an awesome
times
record. But that would make you feel, listening to that record more than once a day, I think would make you feel insane.
I'm not going to answer that question, but I think my body of work speaks for itself. I can't do the TV on, though. MLB TV day game seems like the right sort of level. So I guess just put on NBA TV and, you know, watch your favorite friends talk about hoops.
Well, yeah. You'd only get studio content most. And also the other thing is that, you know, there's been no shortage of day games, even though we're in the in the championship series. There's a fucking day game yesterday, man.
Just the last disrespect for the Atlanta Braves imaginable. They're the Braves, man. Put them on at 2 p.m. Eastern. That's what they like out there.
It was great though, because I got to see Cody Bellinger's home run well before dad bedtime. So I didn't have to stay up to like 2 a.m. for it the way baseball usually forces you to do in October. And the best part was the Braves lost, and the Dodgers, who, again, are the Dodgers, are the only tolerable team I find left in the field. And it's still the fucking Dodgers. But I was like, if this World Series is Red Sox-Braves, I'll just go jump off a cliff. I don't want to fucking deal with that shit.
It would be, it's weird, because like, both of those teams are kind of jumped up fun stories. Like, if you took the uniforms out of the equation and it was just about the weird guys on each team and the, you know, sort of positive energy of their performance, I think it would be great. But you can't do that. Like, they're, one of the team's fans is doing like the racist dance every time they score a run, and the other one are Red Sox fans. Like, right. There's no separating that from the actual experience.
Because the crowd at Fenway is really genuinely fantastic. Like, yeah. They're fucking great. Like, but then you know who they are, and then you're like, oh.
And I also don't want to, as an AL West freak, I don't want to be put in the position of feeling anything positive towards the Astros whatsoever. So I've basically recused myself of the ALCS.
He could put on cooking shows to soothe himself.
Yeah, I know people who do like Love Island, but that sounds a little too scummy.
That's too much. And like the news is bad.
Yeah, you can't do cable news.
No, you know, like
I'll take a tip from my wife. This is she's a much higher functioning individual than me. So her move were the series of shows that ran on like USA Network during the last decade. There's thousands of them, thousands of episodes of like White Collar and
Suits.
Royal Pains. Burn Notice is a little, that's like a bridge too far. Like, she sort of tried Burn Notice, and there's a lot of like kicky punchy and stuff blowing up in it, and it wasn't relaxing to her. Whereas White Collar is just kind of like every one of them is just like a miniature heist thing, and like Matt Bomer's all handsome, and he's sometimes wearing a hat and like a little suit and stuff.
Yeah.
And there's just, you don't have to pay attention to it. It's honestly better if you don't. But there's sort of a zippy inconsequentiality to it that I think makes it like good background noise. So I recommend the USA family of brands. Characters are welcome. I don't think that's them. I think that was somebody else.
No, that's them. That's them.
That was
between that and We Know Drama, but I think that was TBS.
Well, then in that case, you could probably put on like some TNT shit too, like The Closer or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, get some bones going in the chat.
Bones.
All right, and this last one was from Brian. As a father, I'm always quick to tisk my feral children for their various filthy habits and manners. Flushing toilets, or not flushing toilets, chewing with their mouths closed, you know, the basics. Because part of raising little savages is giving them some basic tools to become somewhat functional members of society. However, when I eat an everything bagel by myself, I can goddamn guarantee you I'm going to lick every stray onion, garlic, poppy bit off that plate like a Doberman with its head in a trash can. What filthy habits do you scold other people for, only to turn around and to do yourself when nobody's watching? And why is it picking your nose? Patrick, what do you scold people for that you do yourself? What is your chief hypocrisy?
You know, as the son of a father, I was pretty feral for a long time, but I've since reformed. I've become a skincare guy and stuff. But my last, I still bite my nails.
Family man lifestyle?
Yeah, exactly. But I'm a nail biter. But you know, but because I was so feral, I'm sort of, I take a live and let be gross approach.
Fair enough. Roth?
Yeah, also nail biting. I have been scolded for biting my nails by people I didn't even know. There was
really?
Yeah, I mean, I shouldn't have been biting my nails on the subway. This was years ago, and a lady was like, "Could you not do that?" And I was like, I wasn't like loud or gross. Like, I wasn't biting my toenails. And I got upset. I said, "I'm not biting your nails. This isn't your problem." And she
did
was
you
like,
say-
yeah, I did. Whoa. I was surprised at that.
Wow.
That moment.
Get her ass.
But she was also, I mean, it wasn't like, I wasn't scared of her. Like, she was like, there's a certain type of person that rides the subway and talks to people they don't know in salty ways. They usually have like 3 or 4 double bagged plastic bags with them, just kind of full of stuff. Not because like they live out of them, but just because they're always going back to the store to return crackers because they were stale or something like that. And it did chasten me though. Like, as much as I felt like I was sort of in the right, there's also like, that's a weird thing to do in the first place. And I really probably should have stopped doing it at this point. And yet, I don't know if I know any ex-nail biters. Like, Drew, you did you quit?
I'm an ex-nail biter.
You actually stopped?
Wow. I stopped.
A better way is possible.
It's been a few months. I still can't believe it. It's like, it's the thing I'm proudest of in my life. And I've written books, by the way.
No, that's hard.
I wrote a book recently about how I became a better person after almost dying. But that's
nothing. Yeah, that's nothing compared to
well, this is the proof of being a better person, you know?
But that lady's out of line. She can't say that to you.
Yeah.
Fuck that. Fuck that piece of shit.
What are you going to do?
Like, you know, you shouldn't bite your nails for yourself. But like, okay, maybe there's like, I don't know, a 1 in 1,000 chance you put like a stray germ onto the fucking subway pole because you bit your nails. But fuck that lady. Fuck her in the goat ass. She sucks.
Yeah, I mean, to me, it's like if I was really getting after it, like if it was like the way that a beaver attacks a piece of wood, if there was like shrapnel spraying her, then I would have, I think, would have been very much within her rights.
By the way,
please keep your fingernails bitlets off of me.
I absolutely lick my plate clean, particularly if I've had eggs and there's like runny yolk all over it. I'm not letting that go to waste.
You now lick it with your face?
I pick it up and I fucking lick it.
But you have an implement you could use too, right?
No, because a fork or a spoon is only going to get so much of the yolky goodness. Like, eventually, I need the rough texture of my manly tongue. Just completely stripping away all the yolky goodness from that plate.
I'm not a plate licking boy.
And by the way, not only that, like at restaurants, everything comes with a tasteful smear of like, you know, some sort of like beautiful reduction on the plate. And you can't lick it. You can't lick it, but you should be able to. That's what I
like. A thing that I like at restaurants that I always appreciate is if you get a shell food, you know, a clam, for instance, and they'll bring you maybe some toasted bread with it, but then they'll come back later to see if you want more toasted bread to sop up all the broth that comes with it.
Oh, yeah.
I appreciate that gesture. Yeah. Oh,
dude, the fucking, the dipping of the bread in the mussel sauce is like, it's so good.
And I always want to ask, so I really appreciate not asking. I remember when we went to our anniversary dinner over the summer, went to a place called Anton's in Greenwich Village. We love it dearly. We got their baked clams, which were incredible. And we were both kind of like, my wife and I, just like, in the way that when you see images of like Lindsay Adler's dog looking at her while she's eating an ice cream, like we were both just staring at the plate like that. No bonies, but just like definitely wanting to find a way to get the butter and stuff into our faces. And when the waitress came over and was like, I can bring you bread, that can happen if you want it to happen. Like, I felt maybe like we were just face acting too hard and she felt bad for us, but otherwise it was just very good service.
She saw you lusting after those juices.
Yeah, we wanted those juices.
They know what you want. Restaurants know what you want. They know you want to eat like a pig, but they're going to do it. They're going to be very discreet and elegant about it when you're eating like a pig. Hey, Brandon Nix is our producer and engineer. Daisy Rosario is our executive producer. Our theme song is by Kirk Hamilton. And you can listen to ad-free episodes of The Distraction only on Stitcher Premium. Thanks to Roth and me and Patty Red, you can get a free month of Stitcher Premium right now. Just go to stitcherpremium.com and use the promo code DISTRACT. Very tricky. Don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe wherever it is that you listen. And go subscribe to Defector.com, too, while you're at. And, of course, The Night the Lights Went Out is available in bookstores all across the country. And, in fact, Roth,
that's the book that Drew wrote that I was talking about earlier.
Oh, yeah.
You and I are doing an event with the Greenlight Bookstore Thursday, the 21st. So you guys should figure that out and come join us for that.
Yeah, it's a Zoom call. It's Patrick Sauer and Drew and me. We'll just be talking.
Patrick Sauer, too, also.
Yeah.
We'll join us. Patrick Redford, the other Patrick, thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks for having me. Have a good weekend, everyone.
Yes, and good luck to you on a King season that's going to have like at least 15 really solid victories.
This feels like a special one.
Yeah, we're hitting double digits for sure.
Double digits.
Well, congratulations. Sorry, in haters. Advance. We'll see you guys next week. Bye.
Bye.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.